This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Clone Wars, Gambit, Siege by Karen Miller. Read for you by Jeff Gerner. Chapter 1. Anakin couldn't believe it. More than 3 standard hours, really closer to 4, since their desperate escape from Lock Durd's droid army, and they were still flying instead of falling. What a shame Obi-Wan wasn't awake. He was in the mood for a little not-undeserved boasting. But despite putting up a strong fight, Obi-Wan had succumbed to sleep nearly 2 hours earlier. In the ground car's dim console light, his mentor looked washed out. Burned out, or close enough. Their last stand battle in the Sept compound had taken him to the edge of endurance and then pushed him right over.
Good thing I'm the chosen one, or we might be in trouble. Well, more trouble. Another glance at their stolen vehicle's power cell readout sent his spirits into a swift downward spiral. If they were lucky, they had roughly 1 more hour of propulsion remaining. And after that... The Lanteed night continued thick and dark around them. To conserve their precious power and remain hidden from prying eyes, he hadn't turned on the rigged ground car's headlights, trusting instead to his instincts and the Force. And so far, so good. Neither had steered him wrong. It was Obi-Wan's decision to get them as far away from the city as possible before ditching their makeshift speeder, and since he didn't disagree with that strategy, it was exactly what they'd done. With the city falling farther and farther behind them, together they'd stretched their overstretched senses, trying to determine the best direction to take. To find safety, or what might pass for it, on what had, without warning, become the most hostile of worlds. Bantina. The kidnapped scientist's betrayal was just one more pain, burning in chorus with the others. At least, that was what he tried to tell himself. But really, it was a lie. That particular pain burned brighter than all the others combined.
Bantina. How could you do it? I trusted you. I tried to save you.
Slumped beside him in the passenger seat, Obi-Wan stirred.
Don't, he said, his voice slurry. What's done is done, Anakin. Let it go. Now, how are your engine modifications holding up?
We're still flying.
True, Obi-Wan conceded. And for that, I sincerely thank you. But it seems to me there's a rough note sounding in the primary coolant valve.
Stang.
Trust Obi-Wan to notice. It's fine. It'll hold.
If you say so.
With a stifled curse, Obi-Wan sat up.
Anyway, where are we?
Anakin sighed.
You're kidding, right?
No, not really,
Obi-Wan said, then smothered a yawn.
How long have I been sleeping?
Oh, you know, he said vaguely. Not that long.
Anakin,
Obi-Wan glared, I am not a decrepit relic.
Ooh, sticky ground.
I didn't say you were, but Rex says a smart soldier eats and sleeps every chance he gets. You want to argue with someone? Argue with him. I'm just following his advice.
Well, now you can follow my advice, Obi-Wan snapped. That's twice on this mission you've conspired to stay awake while I slept. Do it a third time, and there will be repercussions.
Repercussions or not, he'd do it as many times as he had to. But that was a fight for another time and place. To keep the peace here and now, he nodded. Whatever you say. And that earned him another sharp look. But sharp looks he could live with.
Obi-Wan raked his fingers through his hair. How many more villages have we bypassed?
Since you fell asleep?
2. They didn't feel right, so I kept going.
Good, said Obi-Wan.
Let your feelings guide you, Anakin, and you won't go far wrong.
He muffled another yawn.
But even so, I think circumstances are going to force our hand soon enough.
No pun intended.
You're right, he said, and tapped a finger to the power cell's readout. We're just about flying on fumes. How much longer do you want to keep pushing our luck?
Until we hear it scream for mercy, said Obi-Wan, frowning. I know we've already traveled a good distance from Lantiba City, but right now there's no such thing as too far.
Actually, I'm starting to wonder about that.
I don't know. We've got a long hike back to the ship as it is, assuming it's still there and some spaceport official hasn't impounded it.
Maybe we should be thinking about... I am thinking about it, said Obi-Wan testy. Now hush a moment. I'd like to get a sense of who and what's ahead.
Even tired to the bone, Obi-Wan used the Force the way a surgeon used a laser scalpel, neatly and cleanly cleaving his way through the night.
There, he murmured eventually. Can you feel that?
Anakin nodded.
That's the largest village we've sent so far, I think.
And there's safety in numbers, said Obi-Wan, opening his eyes. I don't feel any immediate danger surrounding the place. Do you?
He was already angling the ground car in the distant village's direction.
No.
Ominously, the controls were feeling sluggishly heavy now, less responsive than ever. Without warning, the vehicle lurched, then dropped. Cursing, he wrestled it back under control.
Blast, said Obi-Wan, checking the power cell indicator.
Are you sure this gauge is accurate, Anakin?
Teeth gritted, arms aching, he fought the ground car against another precipitate plunge.
Depends on what you mean by accurate, and
sure. A third lurching drop, then a stomach-churning sideways twist as their makeshift speeder tried to fishtail its way through the night. Obi-Wan grabbed the passenger door handle.
So is this the point where we start falling instead of flying?
He hated to admit it, but
yeah, I think it is.
Wonderful, Obi-Wan muttered, and then he sighed.
Well, at least turn on the headlights. It seems a pity not to see death rushing to meet us.
Pessimist, Anakin said, fiercely grinning, and flooded the endless dark with light.
Now hold on, Master Kenobi. Things are about to get a little bit interesting.
Anakin was a brilliant pilot, but that didn't mean he couldn't use some help. Ignoring his leaden exhaustion, the warning ache in his bones, and the drag in his blood, for the second time that night, Obi-Wan discarded prudent self-preservation and abandoned himself without reservation to the Force. Its power howled through him, setting his nerves alight. And howling with the power was the starkest of warnings. Danger ahead, Jedi. Danger all around.
Sweating and swearing, Anakin fought the crippled, dying ground car. They were down to the dregs of its power cell now, encased in a shell of unresponsive metal. The headlights were fading fast, and with them any hope of making some kind of informed landing. Darkness poised to swallow them. Death, too, if they didn't find a way to control their out-of-control descent.
I may be a pessimist, but it's not without cause.
And then, the ground car's shielding gave out in a defiant spray of sparks, like fireworks.
There, you see? Wonderful, Obi-Wan thought.
Sorry, said Anakin, his fingers bloodless on the stricken vehicle's control yoke. I thought we had a bit more juice left than this.
Obi-Wan managed an encouraging smile.
Never mind, you're doing just fine.
Just with an ominous grumbling of stressed metal joints, the ground car's nose dropped, sending them into a sharp dive. On a desperate gasp, he wrapped the Force around them, swaddling the ground car as once he'd swaddled Bail's starship coming in powerless to a space station dock. Except this time was different. It might have handled like a flying brick, but at least Bail's small ship had been in a controlled glide. Their improbably rigged up ground car was falling like a brick. And when bricks hit the ground from a great height, they had the disconcerting habit of smashing to splinters and shards.
Okay, Anakin panted. You've got it. Hold it there, Obi-Wan. If you can just hold the barv right there, I can...
Forget it, Anakin. This thing is past flying. All we can do now is cushion the blow.
No, no, I've still got it. I can do this. Just hold on to it, Obi-Wan. Don't let go of the blasted thing, whatever you do.
If it had been anyone other than Anakin... But it was Anakin... So Obi-Wan poured his will into cradling the machine as his former apprentice bullied it into cooperating. The console lighting failed next, And then, last of all, the headlights. In the moment they winked out, he caught a final glimpse of the onrushing tree-scattered ground, heard a curdling scrape of high branches along the ground car's belly, and then the ground car's power cell died. Anakin? He tore his gaze from the unshielded windscreen. We're out of time! No need to talk about it. In perfect familiar unison, they flung themselves into an active trance, imposing the force upon the unresponsive ground car and flattening their lethally steep trajectory. Amid loud crashing and splintering, the ground car blundered through the pitch-dark countryside's clustered treetops, then struck one broad trunk hard and slewed wildly sideways. Blood swirling, their vision blotched and smeared, they used up what was left of their meager strength, keeping the force wrapped close around the ground car. It was the only thing standing between themselves and a bloody death. And then, they struck Lantiban soil, skipping over the open ground like a stone across a flat pond. The noise was ferocious. Metal sheared and screamed and buckled and tore. They hit something unyielding, a rock or a felled tree, maybe the lip of a culvert, that flipped them into a crazy sideways roll. With the power cell drained dry, the expensive ground car's auto restraints couldn't engage. Pebbles in a bottle, they rattled around and around and around. At last, with one final roll and a rending shriek of stressed Durasteel, their pulverized vehicle slammed right side up and rocked to a halt. Stunned, his head still spinning, Obi-Wan sat in silence and breathed, just breathed, and waited for his pounding heartbeat to subside. We're alive. Who'd believe it? We must be better than I thought. His ears were ringing. He could taste blood in his mouth and feel it on his face and arms and legs. On his sweaty skin, he felt the caress of fresh night air flowing in through the ragged tears in the ground car's metal shell. It smelled cold and clean. No taint of habitation, sentient or otherwise. He couldn't see a thing through the cracked windscreen, but wherever they were, the village he and Anakin had felt through the Force was clicks and clicks away. Wonderful. Because there was nothing he liked better than tramping through an unknown wilderness in the dark. All that was missing now was a Sith holocron. I swear the next time Bail Organa says he's got intelligence for me to look at, I really will throw him out of his speeder. Equally stunned, Anakin slumped in the driver's seat. And then he laughed, sounding almost giddy with relief. So, Obi-Wan, what is it with you and crash landings anyway? Aren't you the one who said every man should have a hobby? Me? No, said Anakin. Sorry, must have been one of your other former Padawans. Another giddy laugh. Seriously, Obi-Wan, so far you've accounted for a speeder bike, a starship, and now a ground car. If you're not careful, you're going to get a reputation. Since he was hurting too much to even contemplate moving, and they were in no danger of bursting into flames, Obi-Wan let his aching head rest against the back of the crumpled passenger seat and gave himself permission to indulge. I reject your hypothesis, he said, deliberately prim. I did not wreck the speeder bike. It was blown up by a bomb, and the Sith crashed Bail's starship, not me. As for this ground car, well, technically speaking, I'm merely a passenger. So clearly I bear no responsibility at all. Anakin's amusement flared brighter. Admit it, you're a common denominator, Master Kenobi. Alas, that is sad but true, he agreed. Perhaps I should smuggle myself onto Grievous's flagship. After all, what's the point in having the mystical power to crash flying machines if one isn't prepared to use it in a good cause? Now that's a plan, said Anakin. I'll remind you to suggest it to the Council when we get home. When we get home. Amusement fading. Obi-Wan closed his eyes. Yes, getting home. Having survived Lock Durd's ambush, that was their next challenge, which they wouldn't conquer by sitting around in the dark. Step one, exit the ground car. Warily, holding his breath, he shifted a little in his battered seat. There was pain, but no grinding of bones, no sudden gush of blood. Thank the Force for minor miracles. We need to get out of here. Are you still in one piece? I think so, said Anakin. You?
Apparently. A soft snort. In that case, maybe we should go find ourselves a casino. I'll settle for a humble cottage and some friendly native faces. Still moving cautiously, he tested the passenger door. I'm trapped on this side. Can you get out on yours? A rustling of clothes and a muttered curse as Anakin tried his own door. No, he said, giving up. Hold on. The darkness disappeared in a flash of blue light as Anakin activated his lightsaber. Obi-Wan flattened himself against the passenger door. Watch out. You'll be cutting me in half with that thing if you're not careful. Anakin tut-tutted. Now would I do that? Shield your eyes. There's going to be dripping metal any second. Slowly, carefully, cursing their ground car's cramped interior and the droplets of slag Durasteel he didn't manage to avoid, Anakin cut through the buckled door, then used the force to peel back the scarlet-edged sheet of metal. His own skin still stinging from a scattering of pinprick burns, Obi-Wan nodded. Good. Now let's get out of this tin coffin, shall we? I'll go first. For once, Anakin didn't argue. Clambering clear of the ground car woke every last bruise and scrape and blaster bolt burn on his body. Letting the sharp discomfort ride him unopposed, standing free and clear of the smashed vehicle, Obi-Wan tipped his face to the moonless night and breathed out his shuddering relief. Then he sought for any immediate danger in the Force and felt nothing. But was that because there was nothing? Or because his reserves of strength were too depleted for him to tell? On a slow surge of Force propulsion, Anakin leapt from the ground car to land unsteadily beside him. I think we're safe for now, Obi-Wan. He shook his head. Oddly, the Separatists' disarray won't have lasted very long. There'll be droids on our tail soon if they're not hunting us already. And you don't need a casino to bet on that. Sure, they'll send droids after us, said Anakin, unconvinced. Without the first idea of what direction we took, they're flying blind, Obi-Wan. The odds of them finding us straight away, or at all, are... And if Durd turns to Dooku for help? Durd's not going to tell Dooku about us, said Anakin, scoffing. He's going to keep this quiet. If he doesn't, he risks getting his head handed to him. Possibly, but we can't assume that, Obi-Wan retorted. We can't assume anything. Mind yourself. In our situation, overconfidence could easily prove fatal. Anakin's impatient irritation seethed through the Force. Maybe, but second-guessing ourselves could get us killed just as fast. So could a lack of conviction, and being timid instead of timid. Who said anything about being timid? He took a deep, painful breath. Stay calm, he thought. You know what he's like. I'm saying we should be prudent, Anakin. There is a time for bold action and a time for reasoned caution, and under the circumstances, I think caution is called for. Silence. And then Anakin sighed softly. Yes, it is. So what do you want to do? Well, he scratched his beard, considering their tediously limited options. You're not wrong about the odds being in our favor, at least for the moment. I say we lengthen them by hiding the ground car, then getting to that village we were aiming for. On foot? Anakin heaved another sigh. Yeah, great, because I was only just thinking that what I really need right now is blisters. Oh, Anakin, Obi-Wan thought. Cheer up. Things could always be worse. Yeah, I know, said Anakin. Weren't you listening? Blisters. Truly, their situation was anything but funny, but still, he had to laugh. Anakin's irrepressibly irreverent humor was one of his most endearing traits. Come on, he said. That ground car isn't going to hide itself. Once more working in wordless tandem, they used the Force to lift and shift and drop and lift and shift and drop the mangled vehicle back to the straggle of trees they'd crashed through on their descent. The task proved brutally hard. They were both so tired and knocked about, and even Anakin's intimidating powers weren't limitless. But they had no choice. Done at last, bent over with his hands braced on his knees, his breathing harsh and fast, Anakin glanced up. I don't know if this is good enough. Wrecked or not, the cripping thing still looks like a ground car, and there's not enough cover here to hide it from a passing spy droid.
Obi-Wan leaned against a handy tree trunk. There wasn't a finger's width of flesh and bone in his body that didn't hurt.
I know.
Gingerly, Anakin straightened.
We'll have to cut it up. Small pieces, then we'll need to scatter them, spread dirt over them afterwards so they don't catch the light.
Anakin's endless resourcefulness never ceased to impress him.
Good idea. And speaking of light...
At the far edge of the horizon, a thin, bright line was spreading like spilled plasma. Dawn. If they were going to do this, they'd have to hurry. There was no telling how many spy droids were out looking for them, or how long it would take one to stumble on their crash site. So they took out their lightsabers and dismembered the ground car, hacking and slicing it into piles of scrap metal. After that, they used the Force to scatter and camouflage the pieces. And after that, spy droids or no spy droids, they both collapsed to the inhospitable ground.
Wake me up this time next year, Anakin muttered, sprawled full length, eyes closed in his filthy, blood-smeared face.
Slumped cross-legged on leaf litter and small stones, Obi-Wan pressed his fingers to his aching temples.
I wish I could, but we can't stay here, Anakin.
I know. Anakin sighed. The growing light showed a deep cut on his forehead and a blackish-purple bruise on his cheek. His humble Lantiban work clothes were badly stained and torn, and he looked to be favoring his right shoulder. There was a scorch mark along his side where he'd been clipped by a blaster bolt.
Just... He cracked open one eyelid. Let me catch my breath.
Anakin never admitted exhaustion. Concerned, Obi-Wan stared at him.
I don't think he's been this pushed since Meriden,
Obi-Wan thought.
Yes, all right, a few minutes, but then we must go.
A Jedi was taught from earliest childhood that the Force was to be used, but never abused, and that used judiciously, it would grant a feeling of well-being, of buoyant energy, that it would replenish and nourish and gently nurture.
Of course, the key word is judiciously.
Anakin and I, on the other hand... He felt like he was ripping apart in slow motion. The Force was never meant to be used the way they'd been using it these past few days, these past months. Ever since the war began, in fact.
Bale's right. We're flesh and blood, not machines. We can't keep doing this. One day the price will be simply too high to pay.
Hey, said Anakin. You all right? Obi-Wan straightened his spine, wincing.
Truthfully... I've been better, Anakin.
Yeah, I know, said Anakin, resigned.
We've got to go.
He pulled up his knees.
Stang! My bruises have bruises.
As have mine, Obi-Wan said, allowing sympathy to show. But we'll feel better once we're moving again.
Yeah.
Anakin looked at him.
So, who was it exactly nicknamed you the Negotiator? Because from where I'm lying, you couldn't sell water to a man dying of thirst.
He smiled.
Ouch. Sorry, Anakin muttered. But right now, the only thing that would make me feel better is...
What?
Lock Durd's head on a plate.
Was it his imagination, or had Anakin meant to say something different? It was hard to tell. He'd covered his eyes with his forearm.
We will get him, Anakin, he said quietly. General Durd's days are numbered.
Everyone's days are numbered, Obi-Wan, Anakin retorted.
Not even Yoda's going to live forever.
The point is, we blew it. I blew it. I trusted Bantina. I pushed you into trusting her too, and now look where we are.
Sitting up, he rubbed his hand over his face. We should have taken out the lab while we had the chance, blown that blasted bioweapon to smoke and debris.
It hurt to hear him this disillusioned and full of self-blame.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Anakin. You followed your feelings. You argued for what you thought was best.
That's nothing to be ashamed of.
No?
Anakin's eyes were bloodshot with weariness and strain. Obi-Wan, trusting that woman nearly got us killed.
You were right. She reminded me of my mother, and I let that blind me.
I'm sorry. Anakin was a proud young man who hated to admit fault. But the point was, he did admit it, Maybe not straight away. Often not straight away. But still, late is always better than never, Obi-Wan thought, then shrugged. It doesn't matter now. What matters is that this mission isn't over. If we act swiftly, I believe we can still thwart Durd before he can use that weapon. There's even a chance we can recapture him. Eyebrows raised, Anakin looked around them. They really were in the middle of nowhere. No birdsong, no speeders, no ground cars. No sense of even the most rudimentary, partially sentient life nearby. The silence was absolute. Only on the farthest edge of awareness, a whispered hint of the village they'd been trying to reach. They had no food, no water, no communications, no transport. No weapons besides their lightsabers, no allies, no backup of any kind. Yes, well, he added, I didn't say it would be easy. Anakin pulled a face. No kidding. Then he fumbled to his feet and looked down. Obi-Wan, we're in so much trouble. I know. But a solution is bound to present itself? Maybe? Except one of these days, that's just not going to happen. Anakin held out his hand. You do know that, right? Obi-Wan wrapped his skinned fingers around Anakin's wrist and levered himself off the ground. Yes, but it won't be today. For the briefest moment, Anakin wasn't General Skywalker, the Chosen One, scourge of the Separatists and hero of the Republic. He was instead the small boy who'd looked for reassurance from a stranger on the night of Qui-Gon's funeral. Promise? Obi-Wan patted his former apprentice's undamaged shoulder. Promise. Now, let's go. Keeping up a steady pace, eventually, they came to the end of barren, uncultivated countryside and discovered a ferrocrete road, narrow but well-maintained. No traffic in either direction. The Force prompted them to turn left, so they turned left and kept walking. The almost treeless landscape was sere, its sparse vegetation crinkled brown and thirsty. The intel provided by Special Ops Brigade Agent Varric had mentioned drought, and here was the proof. Once these had been crop fields, but no crops grew here now. Scatterings of bleached bones and strips of desiccated hide suggested farm animals long since perished. Hinted at a prosperity lost, perhaps forever. Especially if Lanteeb could not be freed from Dooku, from the Sith. An hour passed, another, and another. The sun crawled higher in the pale and cloudless sky, and the flat land around them gradually began to fall and rise in frozen ripples. Unnervingly aware of their ongoing danger, they told and retold their false life stories and quizzed each other on them until their recitations were faultless. They had to be. Weary as they were, they might have misread the Force. There could be a Separatist presence in the village, and if that was the case, their first mistake would likely be their last. All right, Obi-Wan said eventually. Enough. I doubt we'll forget our new histories in a hurry. No, Anakin agreed. I'm pretty sure I'll be dreaming about Teeb Markle when I'm 90. Let me reach 90 and I'll happily dream about him too, Obi-Wan thought, then said. That's the general idea. Skirting the small beginnings of a pothole in the ferrocrete road, Anakin squinted into the middle distance. Stang! I thought that might be a mirage. But it's not, is it? Obi-Wan looked. No, those are hills. One hand clutched behind his head, Anakin jigged in frustration. Great. We've been walking for hours and what, now we have to go mountain climbing? Pimple climbing's more like it, he said, staring at him. Do you know, I'm pleased we left Ahsoka behind. All this complaining is not what I'd call setting a good example. And if Rex could hear you... Disgruntled, Anakin shut up and they kept on walking. Cultivating blisters, ignoring their thirst and hunger and pain, sliding in and out of the Force, they remained exhaustedly alert for the first signs of danger. The road they traveled remained empty of traffic, and so far they'd seen no sign of droid activity. No trundle carts, no mobile security cams, and certainly no battle units.
But that could change at any moment, especially if the village they headed toward held some value for the Separatists. An unarmed civilian population could be effectively controlled by only a handful of armed droids. They'd seen that on Naboo, and on more than a dozen even larger planets since the outbreak of war. After a while, Anakin slowed to a halt.
You feel that?
I think the village is just on the other side of your pimple. Halted beside him, Obi-Wan nodded. The village was only a few clicks distant now. Through the Force, he could read its busy, sentient life. No stark fear or misery, no overwhelming sense of immediate danger or dread. Just a dull, muffling sadness, shot through with brighter threads of anxiety.
Doesn't mean we're out of trouble, though, Anakin added, glancing sideways. With our luck, the place will be lousy with Sep droids. If it is, how do you want to handle them?
Carefully, he replied. But I'm sure if we stick to our story, they'll have no reason to suspect anything.
Unless they've been beamed a security alert.
And you call me a pessimist, Obi-Wan thought. He wiped his torn and filthy sleeve over his sweaty face.
Unlikely. You said it yourself, Anakin. The last thing Durd wants is for Dooku to find out we evaded capture.
Sighing, Anakin pressed his fists into the small of his back.
Let's hope so, because neither of us is in any shape for another fight.
If we keep our wits about us, there'll be no need for fighting, he retorted. We're humble laborers returned to our home planet after 3 long years in the galactic wilderness, remember? With the emphasis on humble.
Yeah, yeah, Anakin muttered. Then he looked at the empty, undulating countryside surrounding them.
Doesn't make sense. Why would anyone build a village way out here? You'd find more life in the Jundland wastes. At least the wastes have got herds of wild banthas. But there's nothing out here except dead trees and dead grass.
I don't know, Obi-Wan said wearily.
Anakin flicked him an irritated look.
You're not curious?
Oh, for pity's sake.
Yes, Anakin, of course I'm curious, but I don't have the energy to worry about it now, so I'm not going to worry about it now. If that's all right with you, of course.
After that, they walked in silence. Some 3 clicks later, they reached the foot of the hills. Resigned, they put their heads down and started for the top, breathing labored, sweat trickling, their bruised muscles shrieking, every cut and scrape and blaster burn awake. Drawing on the Force to help them, feeling it flow like fire through their veins, they pushed through the pain and didn't stop walking until they reached the blunt peak. Below them, men and women toiled beneath the unclouded sun, and the village's purpose became apparent.
That's a damatite mine, Anakin said, pointing to a heavily shielded shaft and sinkhole arrangement on its far right outskirts. Isn't it?
It was, if the intel Bantina Fernan had collected was accurate, which would explain the village's isolation. Unrefined damatite's toxicity virtually demanded that no other settlements be established within poisoning range. Obi-Wan sighed.
I've been very slow. I should have realized we'd find a mine out here.
Yeah, right, said Anakin. You're a simpleton, Obi-Wan. I've always thought that, I just didn't want to say.
Ha ha.
Shading his eyes, he stared down at the village. No Separatists that he could see, at least not in the open. A few old ground cars, some of them traveling to and from the mine. A handful of anti-grav floaters. A huddle of cottages on the far left side of the settlement. What looked like a small factory placed between the rest of the village and the mine. Pale smoke drifted from a series of flat chimneys. Was that where they refined the raw damatite before transport? Probably. Beside the factory stood some kind of warehouse. There was a small, unsophisticated power plant and an irrigation system. Some crops. The 2 planted fields splashed bright greens and yellows and reds against the drab brown of everywhere else. A few domestic animals grazed another splash of green. Other buildings lined 3 sides of what looked like a central communal gathering area. There were even some children playing with a ball. And unless he was mistaken, no battle droids.
Is it safe? Said Anakin, suddenly uncertain.
I think it's safe. Does it feel safe to you?
Yes. Now, come on. We need to get out of the open. So tired by this time, they were close to staggering. They picked their way down the backside of the hill, making sure to stay close to the narrow road's crumbling edge, just in case a vehicle caught them from behind. Stinging eyes fixed on the village, on salvation, they used every Jedi trick they knew to stay on their feet. They were well beyond the village's boundary, unchallenged, past the mine and the refinery and nearing the village's heart, when the playing children saw them and ran shouting for a grown-up. Soon after that, an anti-grav floater came toward them along the main street, guided by a tall, thin woman in a baggy brown tunic and trousers and synthified boots. Most of her gray hair was covered in a faded red scarf. She halted the floater in front of them, blocking the way. Watchful, suspicious, a length of old pipe in one hand, she slowly looked them up and down. "What do you want?" Obi-Wan took a deep breath. "Humble, humble, don't alarm her." "Help," he said, pitching his voice a little high. "Please, Teba, my cousin and I need your help."
Chapter 2. Count Dooku stirred out of uneasy sleep, one dark thought reverberating in his mind, in his bones, and through his gently surging blood.
"Something is wrong."
He sat up. The shielded window in his cruiser's stateroom was uncurtained. Starlight leavened the shadows and picked out the flecks of gold thread in his sumptuous bed cover. Holding out his hand, he admired the silvery wash across his skin. Such a simple, elegant beauty. Then he calmed the bridge.
"Why are we at sublight?"
"My lord, Count, an irregularity was detected in the hyperdrive conversion chamber. It is being addressed now."
"Address it quickly," he said, smiling at the subtle play of light and dark between his fingers. "Or I will be displeased."
"Yes, my lord, Count."
The bridge officer's fear warmed him. Complacency in one's servants was anathema. And then, disconnecting from the comm board, he frowned. So was it this trouble with the hyperdrive that had stirred him from sleep? Or was some other mischief brewing? He closed his eyes to the starlight and let his superbly honed senses unfurl. Power hummed subliminally through the cruiser's Durasteel skeleton as it sailed the astral winds of the galaxy's mid-rim territories. Touched with melancholy, he sighed. This was his life now. No permanent home, no civilized planet to call his own. Coruscant denied him. Well, at least for now. Until the pustuled boil that was the Jedi Order had been lanced and drained, and the Republic once and for all set free of the hypocritical tyranny that Yoda and his minions represented and perpetuated.
"Only the clarity of the Sith can save us."
But until that clarity prevailed, he was perforce a vagabond, cruelly destined to wander the stars, chained to the likes of General Grievous and Newt Gunray, and the other stunted slime of the Separatist Alliance, every last one of them venal and greedy and corrupt to the core. Breathing the same air as such creatures made him ill. Only because Lord Sidious commanded it could he stomach the task. Only his dreams of the day he would see them slaughtered eased the pain of dealing with them.
"Fret not," his exacting master had told him. "They serve a purpose and must live until that purpose is served. You may trust me implicitly, Tyrannus. When they are no longer useful, I shall see them cut down."
Cold comfort, perhaps, but comfort nonetheless. Still, even so,
something is wrong.
Wrong and elusive. Dooku withdrew himself from the Force and opened his eyes. The chrono on his nightstand glowed dim blue, a breath past midnight ship time. He hadn't been asleep for long. Clad luxuriously in silk, he slid from the bed and crossed to the shielded window. Where were they, exactly? He read the starry void beyond the Transparisteel with careless ease, his knowledge of the Republic intimate and instant. Ah, yes.
Currently, his cruiser was skirting Kothless, where the natives scrambled like desperate ants to prepare themselves in case of another separatist attack. Sad, though it was, that Grievous had failed to take the Bothan colony and its spy-net facility, still, Palpatine had yet again turned the edge of defeat into a thin blade of victory. A brilliant stroke indeed to ensure that vital Republic resources were diverted to the planet's protection. Played out properly, the tactic would see the faltering Republic's Grand Army sorely weakened in the ongoing Outer Rim sieges. And with Mace Windu captive to both Kothless and Bothawi Panic, even the Jedi Council had been weakened. Yoda was weakened, for he relied upon Windu's advice and staunch presence. And a weakened Yoda was a very good thing.
So why then am I certain that something is wrong?
Letting his eyes drift closed again, he sought afresh within the Force for a clue to his disquiet. Within the true Force, the Force of power and majesty. The Jedi called it the dark side, like frightened children cowering under their beds. But of course it was no such thing.
They are merely blinded by the power, too weak to wield it or even comprehend.
And so to this brewing mischief. Was it connected to his current mission? His star cruiser Vanquisher was on its way to Umgul in the Darglum system. With the costs of war escalating daily, Palpatine had just announced a new raft of tax increases to help defray ruinous military expenses. Umgul, with its high tourist turnover, was ripe for plucking. And the Pleasure Planet's government was not amused. Was so unamused, in fact, that it had reached out to Count Dooku, the political firebrand, the champion of systems rights, the lambaster of Republic greed, and requested an urgent meeting. Darth Tyrannus had been only too happy to oblige. But did his disquiet mean the Umgul cabinet was now wavering in its intent to abandon the Republic and side with the Separatist Alliance? He sincerely hoped not, for the loss of hedonistic Umgul, with its famous racetracks and casinos and pleasure palaces and luxury resorts and decadent spas, would deeply distress the Republic's idle wealthy, and many other citizens who scraped and saved and bartered their way to a once-in-a-lifetime encounter with unbridled luxury. And their distress would echo in the Senate chamber, rousing more protests, more disarray, more discord. Holonet News and Entertainment would faithfully report the unrest, and its ripples would spread, and spread, and spread. If Umgul is indeed wavering... He waited for the Force to show him if that was the case, uneasily aware that he must tread lightly and not accept what he was shown on blind faith alone. With so much turmoil in the galaxy, even this far out in the mid-rim, the Force's eddies were not always reliable. Not even his vast skill and experience could guarantee a clear answer. It was the price he and Sidious paid for stirring the galaxy to war. But no. The source of his disquiet wasn't Umgul. Could it be Grievous? His loathsome general was slaughtering clones above Eriadu. The recent reports stated it was going quite nicely. No, the trouble wasn't Grievous. Where else could there be mischief, then? What other little projects did he have on the boil? Lanteeb. Of course, Lanteeb. And General Locke Durd. The Nymoidian scientist set his teeth on edge and his skin to crawling. All Nymoidians did, of course, but Durd was the worst. More repellent even than Gunray, and that was quite a feat. At their last meeting, some 3 days ago, Durd had sworn to him on bended knees that the bioweapon was nearly ready. One last small irregularity to be ironed out.
A week at most, my lord count, and I promise you will have it. 1 week.
He'd sensed no deception in Durd's desperate promise. Could he have been mistaken? Could he have been deceived? The thought sent a shiver through him. His master wanted that weapon completed. Further delay would displease him. And no man in his right mind displeased the Sith Lord Darth Sidious.
Durd, if you have lied to me, I shall, with my own hands, peel you in thin strips and force you to feast on your own slimy hide.
So he bent his thoughts toward Lanteeb, toward Locke Durd and the Corellian scientist, Dr. Fernan, the Nymoidian's unwilling accomplice, pushed hard through the roiling force so he might discover the truth. And there, yes, lay the source of his unease. Lanteeb and Locke Durd. The fear was faint, but unmistakable. A different note, a different taste than the ambient fear of the nothing little planet's irrelevant populace.
Something is wrong.
Locke Durd's bioweapon was the linchpin in an important tactical dance. If the Nymoidian had somehow bungled his crucial task... In addition to Vanquisher's standard comm equipment, he of course had his own private holo-unit for discreet conversations. Tight with ruthlessly restrained anger, Dooku fetched the unit out of hiding, placed it on his stateroom's table, and calmed the Nymoidian. Durd took too long to answer.
My lord count,
the scum cried at last.
An honor, such an honor. How can I be of service today?
The Nymoidian wasn't easy to read, not only because of the vast distance separating them, or because reading anyone via hologram was a distinct challenge in itself, but because his duplicitous species as a whole was a slippery challenge, even for a Sith.
What progress have you made with the project, General? By my reckoning, you should be 4 days closer to success. Are you?
Durd's nictitating membranes flicked across his ugly eyes.
Closer, my lord count? Yes, we are certainly closer. Yes, indeed, my lord. Success is within our grasp.
Dooku smiled, being sure to display all his teeth.
And how many fingers would you say you have laid firmly upon it, General?
Fingers, my lord count? I'm not sure I... Thus to say, human idioms, my lord, not always easy to...
General Durd...
He let the dark side flare around him.
I give you fair warning, I am not to be trifled with. You are being handsomely paid for the privilege of serving the Separatist Alliance, and even though you have failed us once, we have forgiven you. Are you under the impression that a second failure will meet with an equivalent leniency? For if you are...
He shook his head.
Alas, you labor under a serious misapprehension. Do you understand me, General, or do my idioms continue to confuse?
No, my lord count. I understand perfectly.
Excellent. Then I can expect to hear from you no later than 4 days hence, with good news about the completion of your project?
Yes, my lord count.
He was close to choking.
4 days, my lord. I will come you in 4 days.
A distinct stench of fear bubbled through the dark side. Dooku smoothed his beard, eyes narrowed.
What aren't you telling me, Durd? The truth? Or I swear you will feel my fingers closing hard upon the back of your neck.
The Nymoidian wrung his plump, clammy hands.
It's nothing, my lord count, I swear. The woman was being troublesome. The scientist, Dr. Fernan... I had to punish her. Not so that she cannot work, of course, but severely enough so she mended her ways.
Without the scientist, his plan was ruined. If Durd had misjudged the situation...
Punish her how, General?
Oh, I took action against a hostage, my lord. She understands now and is perfectly obedient.
Took action meant killed. Grudgingly, Dooku appreciated the gesture.
You're quite certain she will give you no further trouble?
Absolutely, my lord count,
said Durd, eagerly nodding.
She is as penitent as can be. You will have your weapons, sir. The Separatist Alliance will prevail.
He could still sense Durd's fear, but pride and arrogance and truth mingled with it. The Nymoidian believed his own claim, that much was clear.
And the other hostages, they remain secure?
They are secure, my lord count. Dr. Fernan is bound tight to my will.
Then I am satisfied, he said, for now. Return to your work, General. I look forward to your final report.
He broke the transmission in the midst of Dird's incoherently blathered promises, and as he disconnected the signal, he felt a leap in Vanquisher's engines. A heartbeat later, the stars beyond his stateroom's window shivered and streaked as the cruiser made its jump to hyperspace. Disquiet allayed, Dooku returned to his bed. Sleep claimed him swiftly. As the warmth of the dark side closed over his head, he felt himself smile.
Ah, sweet victory. Close enough now to kiss.
Scant seconds after Count Dooku's flickering image vanished from the holopad, Lok Dird vomited down the front of his tunic.
I lied to Count Dooku. I lied to Count Dooku. Hive Mother, protect me. I lied to...
He vomited again. Praised all good things in the Hive that he was alone. He'd lied to the leader of the Separatist Alliance, a man who, by all accounts both confirmed and rumored only, could kill with a look or the snap of his fingers, possibly by merely raising an eyebrow.
I lied to Count Dooku, and I think he believed me.
Horror and relief coursed through his veins. If he'd been human, surely a river of sweat would be pouring down his skin. How he'd managed to dupe Dooku, he didn't know, but he wasn't inclined to question the miracle. No, he'd accept it and build on it, to salvage the ruins of his life.
The Jedi escaped. Every hostage but one rescued. All I have left is that barb of a woman. And if she so much as suspects that the rest of her precious family and friends are safe...
There was no one he could trust with this. Barev, Colonel Argat's replacement, was typical human scum. And if that weren't bad enough, the liaison officer answered to the non-droid wing of the Separatist military machine, not to him. Barev and the others called him General Dird, but he wasn't really one of them. That was a courtesy title, a show of respect he'd had to fight for. Humans were such bigots. Count Dooku was a bigot, though no sentient who wanted to live was fool enough to say so to the man's face. Dird whimpered, mired to his armpits in trouble, staring at calamity everywhere he turned. There was only one creature he could trust. And it wasn't even a creature. It was a droid, built to his most careful specifications and equipped with unique sensor and infrared programming that made it impossible for anyone to give the machine orders in his stead. KD-77 was the closest thing he had to a friend. His office in his now compromised compound was equipped with a small refresher. Dird washed his face and rinsed his mouth, forcing the panic of the last few hours to subside. True, his droid army had failed to kill or capture the Jedi aiding Dr. Fernan, but hope was not entirely lost. There were only two of them, after all. The ground car they'd managed to escape in wouldn't get them far, and beyond Lantiba City's barely civilized limits lay nothing but open countryside and scattered villages. No spaceworthy craft, no comm equipment. The villagers of Lantib were little better than their meat animals. Even with the ground car's transponder disabled, it was only a matter of time before the Jedi were found.
Found and killed. Their involvement here obscured forever. They defeated me once. They will never defeat me again.
A day, at the most, surely, it would take him to eliminate his fleeing enemies. Count Dooku would never know how close the project had come to disaster. He had everything under control.
Droid!
He said, coming out of the refresher.
Droid, I have orders for you.
KD-77 stood patiently in the corner. At the sound of Dird's voice, its photoreceptors lit up.
Sir, this is a priority task,
he said, dabbing a dampened handcloth at the sticky, half-dried vomit down the front of his tunic.
Dr. Fernan must believe that the hostages are still hostages. I want credible holo imagery created to convince her. Several weeks' worth. Understood?
Sir,
said the droid.
Consider it done.
What else? What else? Oh, yes, of course. Barev. The trouble was that he hardly knew the man. Argat, he'd had time to psychologically dissect and learn how to manipulate. But Colonel Barev had only just arrived. They'd barely been introduced.
But he is human, and humans are greedy and driven by fear. They want to live for as long as they can. I can use that.
He sent for Colonel Argat's replacement.
A bad business this, General, said Barev.
He was short, even for a human. Though not yet middle-aged, most of his reddish hair was gone. What remained had been shaved close to his pitifully vulnerable skull. His eyes were blue and small, his crooked teeth stuck out. His skin was sickeningly pale and covered in, what did the humans call them? Oh yes, freckles. At least his voice was pleasantly deep. Too many humans squeaked like rodents.
Bad? Dird nodded. Yes, very bad. Your men at the spaceport have failed me, Colonel.
Colonel Barev's eyes narrowed almost shut.
Ha! I'm sorry, General. Failed you?
Yes, yes, bluster. Humans did not do well with bluster, and they did not like it when their safety was threatened.
Are you deaf, Colonel?
He demanded.
Yes, failed me. Did the Jedi appear out of thin air? No, they came here in a ship. They passed preliminary security checks and docked at the spaceport. And then your men gave them clearance into the city. Your men endangered my vital project, Colonel Barev.
Strictly speaking, said Barev slowly, prior to my arrival, Colonel Argat was responsible for any security lapses.
A small muscle beside his right eye spasmed.
The fault is his.
With a small effort, Dird smothered his delight.
Yes, yes, Barev. I have you now.
Self-preservation was a great motivator.
A mere technicality, Colonel. Argat is dead. I executed him myself with Count Dooku's blessing. You are in charge now. Therefore, you are responsible.
Dead?
Barev's throat convulsed in a swallow.
It was my understanding Argat had been recalled.
Now he let himself smile.
Yes, that's right. Recalled to his deity. Isn't that how you humans put it?
Instead of answering, Barev turned and walked to the office window. Beyond it, the secured compound enclosure was crowded with vigilantly patrolling battle droids.
Things could be worse,
said Barev, his hands loosely clasped behind his narrow back.
Dr. Fernan is uncompromised, the project is secure. As for the Jedi, well, really, General Dird, how much damage can two men do?
He felt his lips thin in a snarl.
You are a fool if you underestimate them, Colonel. I want them found. Is that clear? I cannot have my project further disrupted. Count Dooku is waiting, and he is not a patient man.
Colonel Barev's shoulders tightened.
You needn't concern yourself, General, or involve Count Dooku. The Jedi are on borrowed time.
How do you intend to find them?
Barev turned away from the window.
Scout droids are already deployed. As soon as the Jedi are sighted and their exact location is calibrated, they will be overwhelmed by our forces.
It seemed a sound enough plan.
Don't send humans against them,
Dird said, raising a warning finger.
Droids only. Jedi can't sense droids. You must exploit their weaknesses. They don't have many, so you can't afford to miss even one.
Barev's mouth pinched at the corners.
General, I am an experienced soldier. Your advice is appreciated, but unnecessary, I assure you.
A strong sense of self-preservation and pride. This Barev would be easy to control.
You're offended, Colonel,
he said, feigning regret.
I'm sorry, that wasn't my intent. I'm merely trying to save you from Count Dooku's wrath. If he ordered me to kill you, I'd be obliged to obey. and after Colonel Argat.
He pretended to shiver.
Oh, well, it would be a great pity.
Eyes watchful and frightened, Colonel Barev snapped to attention.
Do not concern yourself about the Jedi, General Dird. They are dealt with. Now, is there anything else I can do for you?
Indeed there is, Colonel,
he said, lacing his fingers over his middle.
Thanks to, he smiled, Colonel Argat, this facility is fatally compromised. For all I know, the Jedi are lying low somewhere close by, intending to return and sabotage my work. And should they elude your forces, they might well succeed. I want the Stage 2 facility prepared for immediate occupation. Dr. Fernan and I must be able to move in there no later than midday tomorrow.
Midday? Said Barev, his voice tight. Yes, General.
And Colonel,
he added, just as Barev reached the office door.
I meant it when I said I didn't want to be faced with the task of recalling you. So for both our sakes, I think that what has happened on Lantibe should be kept quiet. We can contain the situation without distressing Count Dooku. Agreed?
Colonel Barev stared at him in silence. Droid patrols challenging one another's identities was the only sound for quite some time. And then the human nodded.
Agreed.
As soon as he was alone again, Dird made his way upstairs to Dr. Fernan's criminally generous accommodation. He nearly fell over 6 droid patrols on the way. Another 10 droids guarded the corridor outside the doctor's room. 5 more were stationed inside it. The woman got off her chair and looked at him with a dull hatred as he closed the door behind him.
I want to see the rest of my family and friends, she said flatly. I want to know they're all right.
If she hated him, it was nothing compared to what he felt for her. Striking his prisoner to her knees, Dird heard her sharp grunt of pain and felt warm pleasure blossom.
Don't test me, Doctor, he said, standing over her. Not after what you've done.
Red human blood trickled from the corner of her mouth. Weak tears filled her eyes.
What happens now?
He bared his gums at her.
Now we finish our project. But not here. We leave this facility tomorrow. Pack up the lab.
Where are we going?
Why should you care?
He said, and kicked her in the ribs. Carefully. Bruises, not breakage. That was the goal.
All you need to know is that the Jedi will never find you. They'll be dead soon, and if you don't do exactly what I say, when I say it, they won't be the only ones.
He nodded at the holodisplay on the table, which was playing a continuous loop of her friend Sam Sam's execution. The droids guarding her were under orders to make sure she didn't touch it, or walk away, or close her eyes.
You understand?
Her gaze shifted to the little figure in yellow as it plummeted into the lake.
Yes.
Bending, he captured her ugly human face between his fingers and pressed until the bones beneath her flesh threatened to give way.
Good.
Struck speechless, Bail Organa stared at the man he'd called his friend for nearly 15 years. I must be hearing things. He cannot have said what I think he just said, because Trin Netzel might be the walking, talking embodiment of an absent-minded professor, but he's not an idiot. I'm sorry, he said at last. You've done what? Swathed, throat to mid-thigh in his stained and patched lucky blue lab coat, his pale hair pulled back from his predatory face in a braid, Trin didn't look up from carefully tipping a small capful of dark blue crystals into a glass beaker.
Hmm? Oh, I've successfully created a sample of the bioweapon.
He nodded at the lab's glass-fronted safe hutch, a stone's throw distant at the other end of his bench.
It's in there.
And indeed, through the hutch's security-shielded transparasteel door, Bail could see a lidded container, 3/4 full, of some greenish, noxious-looking substance. Before he could stop himself, He'd taken an alarmed sideways step.
Trin!
Surprised, Trin finally looked at him.
What? Am I slipping? Did I not make myself clear?
Bale thought, then said,
You created the filthy stuff? I thought you were supposed to be finding a way to kill it.
Trin shrugged.
Can't kill what I don't have, Bale.
Funny, he'd forgotten how pragmatically indifferent his friend could be.
He's a scientist, remember? He worships at the altar of objectivity.
I know that, but...
But what?
Bale.
Trin put down the glass beaker.
Look, how's this for an idea? I'll refrain from telling you how to get legislation passed in the Senate, and you can hold off telling me how to be a biochemist. Sound fair?
Nothing about this current crisis was fair. Prickling with unease, Bale started to pace around the impressive Jedi Temple laboratory Yoda had offered to his friend for as long as it was needed.
Shelve the flippancy, Dr. Netzel, he snapped.
I'm not in the mood. I've just spent half a day cooped up with the most self-interested, self-righteous, self-everything senators it has ever been my misfortune to know. I'm hungry, I'm tired, and if I have to hear one more piece of bad news, I'm going to...
This isn't bad news, Bale,
said Trin, watching him closely.
It's good news. The toxin's formula is proven. I've got a solid place to start from now.
Proven? Halting on the far side of the lab, Bale felt his belly turn over in a queasy roll.
You mean you've tested it? Here?
What was he thinking?
Trin, we already know the filthy stuff works.
No, we were told it works. Now we have first-hand proof. There's a difference.
You tested it?
Pacing again, he fought the furious urge to smash something.
Trin, this is the Jedi Temple. Up there,
he jabbed a pointed finger at the ceiling,
is the Jedi Council. You cannot endanger them by...
Hey!
Now it was Trin's turn to snap with temper.
Don't tell me what I can and can't do in my own lab. This place is the best facility I've ever worked in. Trust me. I'm the only sentient at risk.
Which was simply one more reason for him to feel sick.
I don't care how secure this lab is. What you're doing is too dangerous.
Trin stared at him.
That's not your call.
Excuse me, but I think it is. As head of the Republic's Security Committee, I...
Bale, all due respect. But you don't know what you're talking about,
Trin said.
I did what I had to do with Master Yoda's full knowledge and approval. And now that I know this bioweapon inside out, I can get to work on creating an antidote. Something broad enough to cross the species barrier and bind up the active toxins while they're still in a victim's bloodstream.
That brought Bale up short.
You mean that?
He said, his heart pounding his ribs.
You can really do this.
Well, I'm not making any promises,
Trin said, pulling a face.
But I wouldn't have left my students halfway through the semester if I didn't think I could help.
Of course you wouldn't. I'm not suggesting... You're brilliant. I didn't mean to...
Tangled, Bale stopped talking and started pacing again. A tension headache was brewing behind his tired eyes.
Sorry. Like I said, it's been a long day and it's not over yet.
Trin came around to the front of his bench and hitched himself onto it. His bright orange trousers rode up his skinny ankles, revealing mismatched socks of fluorescent green and pink. His lab clogs were crimson, so were his eyes. Well, today they were crimson. Yesterday they'd been violet. Tomorrow, who knew? Trin was a man of changeable disposition.
Bale,
he said, gentle now, his temper abandoned.
I've never heard you sound this scared. What aren't you telling me? What's happened now?
Nothing had happened, and that was the problem. There'd been no word from Obi-Wan or Anakin since they alerted Yoda that they were going back to Lock Durd's compound. And in this situation, no news was not good news. No news was very bad.
You don't have to say, Trin added, but as it stands, I'm the next best thing you've got to a captive audience.
Bale hesitated. Trin Netzel had been witness at his marriage, had put him and Breha with the best fertility doctor in the Republic, and matched him drink for drink after every one of Breha's 5 miscarriages. Trin had let him weep without saying a word when their last hope for a child was exhausted. There was nothing he could not entrust to this man. But I need him focused, so pull yourself together, Organa. If he's worried about you, he can't do his job. And if he can't do his job... You're right, I am worried about something, he said, because he would never lie to Trin. But it'll keep. What can you tell me about this bioweapon? Trin frowned. It makes me ashamed I was ever proud to call Bantina Fernan a colleague. There was a second bench in the lab, piled high with flimsies and hard-copied biochemistry texts, and at least a score of data readers. Bale leaned one hip against it and folded his arms. She's under duress, Trin. I don't care. What she's created is a perversion of science. She's betrayed herself and her calling. There are those who say every weapon created is a perversion of science, he pointed out, and that using those weapons is a betrayal of life. I seem to recall you making a few heated points in favor of that argument once or twice. Trin scowled.
I don't like war. I don't like killing.
I don't either, he said after a moment. But since we last sat down face to face, my friend, I've killed. It was in self-defense and in defense of others, but even so... Remembering the desperate battle on that secret space station, a confrontation he often relived in his dreams, Bale shook his head. I can't even tell you how many. There wasn't time to stop and count. And while I'm coming clean, I suppose I should also confess that I voted for the creation of the Republic's clone army. Now that's science taken to extraordinary lengths. And 2 days ago, I approved the diversion of funds from a refugee crisis program to the discretionary account used to make up the shortfall in payments for clone replacements.
I can't see.
Trin wrapped his long braid around his fingers and pulled hard, a familiar nervous habit.
Stang, Bale, why would you tell me that?
I guess because... He sighed. How do we know what we'd do if we were forced to watch someone we loved die because we didn't do as we were told? Trin stared at the floor, uncomfortable.
I'd like to think I'd have the guts to stay strong, no matter the pressure or the punishment.
Yes, well, we'd all like to think that, he said dryly. But in these past months, I've learned a lot of things, Trin. Most of them unpleasant.
Yeah, I'm getting that,
Trin said, his dark red eyes somber. He looked around the magnificently equipped lab.
I mean... You and the Jedi, brand new best friends? I have to tell you, Bale, I didn't see that coming.
Neither did I, he admitted. Oh, and I was right, by the way. The Jedi aren't always comfortable, but you can trust them. And I promise you that without them, our Republic would be in tatters by now. As it is, even with them... Abruptly overwhelmed, Bale dragged a hand down his face. Things are bad, Trin. With no way of knowing where or when the Seps will strike, if we don't have a reliable antidote to this bioweapon, then they'll win. And that means the end of the Republic.
So I need you to make this happen.
No, Bale, Trin protested. I told you I can't promise you anything. I might despise Bantina Fernan for a gutless coward, but she's still a genius. This thing she's invented, this monstrosity of a weapon...
His friend's abrupt distress was worrying.
Trin, you can do this. You're the best biochemist I know.
Trin glowered at him.
You're a Nidziga, Organa. I'm the only biochemist you know.
Bale tried to smile, but failed abysmally.
Trin, seriously, whatever you need, no matter what it costs, tell me and I'll get it for you. No questions asked. You've changed.
Trin said after a taut silence.
I can see it now.
As if I didn't know that, Bale thought, then said, not for the worse, I hope. Trin bit the end of his braid, another old familiar habit, the one he turned to when he was particularly upset.
I hope so, too.
I have to go, Bale said, glancing at his wrist chrono. There's a late Senate session tonight that I need to prepare for.
Look...
Trin said, hunched inside his lucky blue lab coat.
I'll do my best for you, Bale. If the work needs fresh blood, I'll even open my own veins. But you need to tell the little green guy and whoever else you answer to, this might not happen. You have to understand that. You have to prepare. For what? Annihilation? Sickened, Bale nodded. I will. But I believe in you, Trin. I believe you can make it happen. Trin rapped his knuckles on the bench once and got back to work.
Chapter 3. Despite the late hour and his continuing obligations, Bale didn't leave the temple for the Senate straight away. Instead, he made the long and convoluted journey from its lowest levels up to the giddy heights of the Jedi Council Chamber, where Yoda had arranged to meet with him.
I take it there's still no word, Master?
Standing before the panoramic window, watching a distant, impressive Republic cruiser heading for the GAR docks, Yoda shook his head.
Correct you are, Senator.
And what does that mean?
Yoda glanced over his shoulder.
Delayed they have been. Dead they are not.
Not dead. Not dead.
Bale swallowed.
You're sure?
Clouded is the force with dark side menace. But know that much I do. Obi-Wan and Anakin live.
It was odd how relief could be as sickening as fear. And when you say delayed? Supported by his spindly gimmer stick, Yoda turned from the window and began an aimless wandering of his council airy.
The answers that you seek, Senator, give you I cannot.
The gimmer stick rapped the chamber's beautifully parquet floor once with sharp emphasis.
Against Obi-Wan and Anakin going to Lantib I was. Spies and agents the Jedi are not, A task for your people this mission was.
He was being rebuked and didn't much care for it. Then why did you approve their involvement?
Know why you do,
said Yoda, ears low, eyes hooded.
Because I asked a friend for help, and that friend asked you to let him help me.
But he wasn't about to let guilt cripple him. There was way too much at stake for that.
We can point fingers later, Master Yoda. Right now we've got another crisis to avert. If Obi-Wan and Anakin are in trouble...
said Yoda, and kept on pacing.
If? A Jedi you need not be, Senator, to know that trouble Obi-Wan Kenobi and young Skywalker have likely found.
Clasping his hands behind his back, Bale braced his shoulders.
In that case, Master Yoda, what do you intend to do about it?
Yoda stopped his slow pacing, planting his gimmer stick before him, both hands braced. He pulled his chin to his chest.
Nothing.
Nothing?
Even though he'd been half expecting the answer, still it shocked him.
Master Yoda, we can't abandon them. Forget the fact that we have a personal stake in what happens. For all we know, Obi-Wan and Anakin hold the key to defeating Durd and his bioweapon.
We can't... Another emphatic rap of the gimmer stick.
We can, and we must, Senator. No clue is there to what is happening on Lantib. Rush to help them we could, yes, and make things worse, Patient we must be. Trust in Obi-Wan and his former Padawan we must have.
Trust wasn't the issue. This was a matter of honor and obligation.
I got them mixed up in this. I can't leave them twisting alone,
Bale thought, then said,
But, Master Yoda...
Senator Organa!
Abruptly, Yoda's severe expression eased.
For your friend, fearful you are. Understand that, I do. But a survivor, Obi-Wan Kenobi is. Know that better than anyone you do. The Force is with him. Your own battles now you should fight. Enemies our Republic has both inside and out. The Senate, your arena, is. The Jedi, you must leave to me,
He could argue, of course, but there'd be little point.
In this place, Yoda was the supreme authority. And to rail at him for being a Jedi would only threaten their new and in many ways tentative partnership.
Of course, Master Yoda, he said, bowing.
But if the time comes when I can be of assistance...
Call upon you I shall, Senator Organa,
said Yoda.
Doubt that, do not. A loyal friend to the Jedi you are.
And as a friend, he had to admit his own part in their current dilemma. I'm very sorry, Master Yoda, that my actions have once again put Obi-Wan in harm's way, and that this time Anakin's at risk too. Sighing, his gaze downcast, Yoda traced a small circle on the floor with the tip of his gimmer stick.
No. Done that, the war has, Senator. If not trouble on Lanteeb, then trouble elsewhere would they have found. In these dark times, finding trouble every Jedi is.
He looked up.
Your scientist friend, Dr. Netzel. Progress has he made in defeating Lockdurd's weapon?
Bale hesitated, then shook his head. Not yet, but he's committed to finding an answer.
And believe, does he, that an answer can be found?
I really don't want to answer that. But he had to. Master Yoda, he's hopeful. Turning, Yoda again stared out across never-sleeping Coruscant.
Hope we must all have. But win a war, hope will not. Save lives, hope will not. Defeat the Sith, hope will not.
He'd never imagined he'd hear Yoda sounding discouraged. The Jedi defeated the Sith once. You can do it again.
But defeat them we did not, Senator,
Yoda retorted.
Only into hiding did we drive them.
And you'll drive them out again, out of hiding and to their destruction. They can't prevail, Master Yoda. Two Sith against so many Jedi? It's just not possible.
Yes, yes,
said Yoda. He sounded so weary.
Hope that we must.
Tendrils of fog were creeping through the city's forest of buildings, illuminated hollow billboards and beacons, and the headlights of passing speeders and other vehicles glowed luminous and strange, rainbow colors muting and smearing. Fog turned Coruscant from brash and beautiful to mysterious. It's a wonder it doesn't collapse under the weight of all the secrets it's hiding. He should be getting back to the Senate. He'd arranged to meet Padme there before the evening's scheduled preliminary vote regarding a trade dispute between Deveron and Kalada. The rival planet Spat was threatening to disrupt the Corellian trade spine, and the Corellians were in turn threatening punitive action. Because, of course, what the Republic really needs right now is more fighting. He and Padme had agreed to share their research on the situation. She'd be waiting for him by now, only...
If a question you have, Senator, then ask it you should,
said Yoda. Now he sounded faintly amused.
And answer it I will, if able I am.
Once, in idle conversation, Obi-Wan had called this ancient Jedi the most intimidating person I've ever known. He wasn't wrong, and it wasn't even deliberate. Yoda simply exuded the kind of innate authority that turned everyone around him into a subordinate. Partly, it was the weight of his long life, but mostly it was because he'd accrued not just centuries, but centuries of wisdom. The Jedi Master hadn't let a minute of his 900-odd years go to waste. And though I'm little more than a child compared to him, he seeks out my opinion and sometimes follows my advice. Every so often, remembering that, Bale found it hard to breathe. Yes, Master, I do have a question, he said. When do you intend to tell the Supreme Chancellor about the bioweapon and the mission to Lanteeb? When are you going to tell him that Obi-Wan and Anakin are in trouble? Slowly, Yoda turned.
Your investigation into leaked classified information, Senator. Concluded, is it?
The Jedi Master knew perfectly well that it wasn't. So far, every discreetly pursued avenue of inquiry had run into a dead end. Weeks after beginning the investigation, they were no closer to learning who was behind the worrying security breaches in divisions up to and including the Republic's executive branch. It was but one of the things that kept him from sleeping well at night. I appreciate the sensitivity of the situation, Master Yoda, but we can't leave Palpatine in the dark much longer, Bale said. For one thing, I'm answerable to